Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome once again to the PRS Table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we are in our third series of our Black History Month series called Black Money Matters. And tonight we are so ecstatic to have not just one but two guests on this with us this evening. And the theme that we'll be talking about this evening is the future, economic development, and entrepreneurship. And so we want to just go ahead and introduce all those who are here with us at the table, those who are the guests, as well as those of us who are hosting. So again, we have myself, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and also we have Mary Ann Williams, who will bring her greetings, as she always does every time we have this show, in her own special way. Mama, how are you doing this evening?
I'm just doing fine. I'm so excited. And I just want to say good evening to my PRF family. And I also want to say good evening and welcome to the new listeners. There is no waiting period, so you are also part of the PRF family, and I'm so excited that you all took out your time to be with us this evening, and we're just going to have an exciting time. Amen.
Amen, amen. So listen, I want to introduce one of our guests, none other than Earl Martin Phelan. If you were have been with the PR Table for a while, you know that this is not his first time on the show. He has been with us before, and also he was with us last year during our Black Money Matters series in 2016, where we were talking about social entrepreneurship. And so we have CEO and founder of the Phelan Leadership Academies and also Summer Advantage USA. He's a graduate of Harvard Law School. He's the co-founder of the Bell Foundation. He also founded Summer Advantage, and we just want to allow him to talk a little bit about his experience and what he's doing with these organizations, because entrepreneurship is so important. So without further ado, we just want to give Earl Martin Phelan an opportunity to say hello to our listeners. Earl, thank you for being with us once again.
My pleasure. Great to be here, Nate.
So listen, I wanted to start off today's show just by hitting it where we know we are. We're talking about economic development. We're talking about entrepreneurship. And so many people, a lot of times, they actually, as you talked about it with us last year, when you were talking about social entrepreneurship last year, one of the things that resonated with me and kind of inspired me a lot was how you talked to us, all of us who were listening, that when you have people that are entrepreneurs, but they want to be social entrepreneurs, but they don't take the necessary steps to focus on the entrepreneurship. And I think one of the things that you mentioned was it's good to want to be a social entrepreneur, but if you don't try to master the skill and the art of being an entrepreneur first, you're not going to be that successful. That's how I took it. So if you can, just give us a little bit about yourself. I know I covered a couple of highlights, and I know how humble of a person you are. But whatever you want and think that it would be so beneficial for our listeners to hear, especially in this area of economic development and entrepreneurship.
Well, I think we'll go through a lot tonight, I'm sure. But, you know, I think that one of my brothers-in-law said, hey, listen, if you can find a career that you're passionate about, that you love doing, since that will be the vast majority of how you spend kind of every hour of every day, then you will find a way to make it sustainable, and you will find a way to be comfortable. And so I always kind of walk through life with that as the founding piece. And so I think one of the underpinnings of entrepreneurship or intrapreneurship, so entrepreneurship being, hey, I'm going to go out and start my own business, whether it be a for-profit or a nonprofit. I took the nonprofit route, or an entrepreneur, which is I'm going to be in a company, have the safety and security of a salary, but I'm going to leverage all the resources that are in this company to show that I could create a sub-business that would be highly profitable to the company and obviously benefit myself as well. One of the underpinnings, at least for me, has been a willingness to take risk. And a willingness to say, almost kind of stake everything on, I believe so much in what I'm doing that I'm going to, A, work hard, and as hard as anybody is working out there on what they're trying to achieve, and then, B, I'm going to have faith. I'm going to have faith that some doors that may not be quite open at this minute to me, or I may not see how they're open at this minute, will come open just at the perfect time to make sure that I continue to thrive. So that kind of underpinning has probably been those three beliefs have probably been at the core of everything that I've done. I've been blessed to take my first nonprofit from 20 kids, a small community service project in Roxbury, to 15,000 children annually. 100,000 children impacted over the life of the organization while I was the leader, and most importantly, one of the most effective summer learning programs in the country, and then convert that into schools and saying, you know what, I've loved doing this thing out of school time, but I am so frustrated that I'm sending my kids back, what we call scholars, sending our children back into these failing schools. So I'm going to build a nonprofit that focuses on building great schools for children. And we've been blessed to create, out of the gate really, an $87 million nonprofit organization that does that for children as well.
Wow. And can you tell, for those who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about Phelan Leadership Academy, because that's what I know is something that you're so passionate about and so happy that it has gotten to this point. And I know how hard, or a little bit about how hard you work to taking it to the next place, wherever God is going to take it to. So can you just give us a little background about the George and Veronica Phelan Leadership Academies?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm blessed to be on the phone with my mom and my brother, and so that's the cornerstone of all things. And then I was blessed, and I was also blessed to be adopted at age two by George and Veronica Phelan, and raised by them for my life, and found that, you know, I wanted to say, hey, thank you. To everybody who, mom for giving me life, and my mom and dad, George and Veronica Phelan, who helped me be the person that God intended me to be. I'm not fully there yet, but that's not their fault. That's solely my responsibility. And so on that journey, though, we were just so fortunate to do several things. One is to go through my own journey of understanding who I was. My mother and father who raised me are white, as are my seven older brothers and sisters. And so going through the journey of having so much love, so much support, so much belief in who I was, and yet still struggling with how do I, as a young black boy, survive in this country, and not just my small white town of Norwood, where there are a lot of people, the vast majority were supportive of me, but I also got a taste of there are some people who don't love you, and they just don't love you because you're a different race, and not only do they not love you, they would love to crush you if they possibly could, whether it's trust your spirit or belief in self or belief in who you could be. And so I think coming through that journey was one piece of what we're trying to do at the George and Veronica Phelan Leadership Academies. And our schools are right now 98% black and Latino, probably 90%, 91% black, 7% Latino. And we want to make sure our kids who may be growing up in families with parents of the same race, and most of our kids are, but still mm-hmm. face racism and still face institutional racism, still face racism in the media about who they really are. And so part of what we're doing is saying, know your history, know thyself, and mm-hmm. know the beauty from which you've come. That's one piece. The second part is we're not, we're a public school, even we're public charter schools, but we're public. And so we're not necessarily saying you are a child of God, but we're certainly in every other way getting right up to that line to say you are children of God and you are special and you are here for a reason. And don't let anybody take that away from you as you think about what's possible, regardless of what you're going through in your home or what you're going through as you walk to school or what you're going through in the community. Don't let anybody take that away from you. And so our teachers are so devoted, our administrators are so devoted to making sure that when our children come to, and we call them scholars, when you come to our school, you feel that love, you feel that nurturing, and you kind of, if you didn't know why, you're saying, why are these people treating me so special? Why are they making this such a safe environment? Why are they making this such a beautiful environment? Why are they exposing us to the things they're exposing us to, whether it's underwater robotics or college field trips or just exploring your interest in art or in physical education or in dance or in music? Why are they doing this for us? And we are constantly reinforcing, you know, what I would describe in one word is just love. And so a lot of what we do is that piece. And don't get me confused. Our goal mm-hmm. is to say, yep, you know, we're 97% Black and Latino. We're 97% free and reduced price lunch. And we're going to whoop, our kids are going to whoop the state average in terms of state tests. So this isn't, you know, oh, it's just soft and fuzzy. We're going to whoop you because our kids are stronger because of what they've mm-hmm. come through. And we're going to love them up to their fullest potential. And believe you me, there's a, yeah, there are some days which it's harder than others, but it's been a good journey. And I'm really excited about where we are organizationally and what's possible for many, many more kids because of what our current scholars are doing.
And right now the schools are located in what city and state?
Yeah, sorry. So we have 5 schools today. They're all in Indiana. 3 are in Indianapolis. 2 are in Gary, Indiana. We serve 2,400 children who we call scholars. 4 of our schools are K-6, so ages 5 through 12. 1 of our schools is a middle school, high school, so our school network goes from 5 to 18 years old. Our high school last year had 94% college graduation rate. 89% of our scholars went to, our graduates went to college or joined the military, and many others went directly into careers. So we're very proud of our network. And because of the success, the outcomes our children have achieved, we've been approved to open 10 additional schools to serve 9,000 additional children in the coming years.
Wow, that is that's amazing. That's amazing.
Amen. That's amazing.
Well, definitely congratulations to you, Earl, and also
thank
for
you.
Your team. And let me say why I'm saying the team, not because you need to hear that, but because I know you. But other folks need to understand that when you're dealing with entrepreneurship, you're dealing with building something. None of us can do it by ourselves. And so I know, and I think you would echo the sentiment that you would not be where you are, and the organizations that you have been blessed to build would not be where they are if it wasn't for the help of other people. And it takes partnerships to get us to these different places where we are truly, truly effective and successful in what we're doing. And so I was thinking about, why Indianapolis? Why the state of Indiana? Was there something, you know, through some research that you had found that, you know, this is the area? Can you tell us why you picked that location to launch the PLA Academies?
Yeah, so I mean, Boston is home for me, and this may be inappropriate, but so thrilled to have 5 Super Bowl championships in the recent Belichick Brady era. So that probably turns me off to 9/10 of the country. But one of the things I learned from the New England Patriots, just what you said, Nate, which is like everyone says, oh, it's just Tom Brady. It's just, I'm like, they have preached it's about team, and it's about a collective of individuals, everybody doing their respective jobs, and everybody being willing to take on an additional responsibility that maybe on another team they wouldn't do. They just say, I don't do that that piece. And we were just blessed to find a fellowship that brought us to Indianapolis. And candidly, you know, my belief has always been, my pull has been, you know, how do we give the most to those who are least served? And in general, that's black, brown, and poor white children. And so this opportunity opened up, and even though it wasn't in my hometown of Boston, it allowed me to fulfill that mission of reaching those who are least served, who have the fewest advocates, and in fact seem to have so many who care nothing about or care last about what happens to our children. And so this was an opportunity that opened up here, and blessed to be here, and blessed to be what we're be doing what we're doing. But you know, every morning I wake up as an entrepreneur, I have a vision statement, and you know, I read Think and Grow Rich, and take that for what you will. Some people don't like it because they say, oh, it's about getting rich. No, it's not about getting rich. It's about what's a proven process to try to achieve whatever it is your goal is. And, you know, I've kind of sworn by many things. One of the things is when I wake up, I'm going to read what I'm here to achieve in this earth, not today, but on this earth. And then the other stuff kind of flows from that. And so my vision statement, again, it has many names, but my vision statement says, no, this is about a national impact on the lives of hundreds of thousands of children and giving them the true opportunity they deserve to be who God intended them to be. And so that's what I'm focused on. It happened to start here in Indianapolis. It then grew throughout Indiana to Indianapolis and Gary. And I'm fully in the belief that it will continue to grow. And if I make the right decisions, my team makes the right decisions, and that we'll, you know, we'll be blessed to realize that vision.
Wow. And I want our listeners to really pick up on what you just said about a vision statement, because there are so many people that are trying to operate in a space, trying to get ahead, trying to do certain things that's going to strengthen them economically, put their families in better positions. And I challenge everybody to put before them, get the writing after the night show, you know, listen to us for the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But after the show is over, when we go off the air, I'm going to challenge, and I hope one of our members on our team actually puts that out there on our Facebook page. What is your vision statement? And we need to challenge folk to have a vision statement. As Christians, right? I'll go here. As Christians, we are spoon-fed, if you will. We are I won't say taught, but we're told. You know, one of the first things you do when you get up in the morning is thank God. You should always get up in the morning, you should say your prayers, and some will say that you need to read your Bible. And I say, you know what, all those things are good. And so if that's the priority, then the next thing that you should do would be read your vision statement. I mean, we can't take this whole notion of God has put us on here on this earth for great and mighty things and not put into and incorporate into practice things that are so practical. What you've given us is something that is practical and is needed, and I think so many people miss it. So I'm hoping that those who are listening tonight will take that advice. And if, for those who may be joining in, you know, we're talking with Earl Martin Phelan, the CEO and founder of the George and Veronica Phelan Leadership Academies, and also the Summer Advantage USA. And so for you to say that the organization has grown to $87 million, right, Earl? I think that's what I heard.
Yes.
$87 million. And if you're listening to this show, and to have somebody on the show that has a $87 million organization that did not start there, that wasn't just given to him, And he's telling you, when he gets up every day, he reads the vision statement. He puts the vision statement before him. If you don't do it, you're just letting, you're not letting wisdom sink in right now. So the other thing that I heard, Earl, was you talked earlier about you have to take risk. And then when I asked you a question about Indianapolis, because I was really curious about that, because I'd never asked that before, never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
That had to have been a risk. And so the people, what they've heard by me just summing it up is that you took a risk. You didn't try to stay where you were and look at how successful things have worked out. So many of our people, this is Black History Month, and this show is Black Money Matters. So many black people fail to take the appropriate risk. And when I talk about the appropriate risk, I'm talking about sometimes you just have to be willing to get out your comfort zone. I can tell you, there's a place in one of the government facilities that I deal with a lot. And in this location, it's in a depressed part of a particular state, at one of the top three poorest counties in the whole state. And in this government facility that's there, there's people that are just from that poorest location. And they have opportunities because now they've come in, they've gained some experience, but so many of them fail to want to leave, Earl. So many of them just do not want to get out of their comfort zone. And I just believe that because they don't want to get out of their comfort zone, one of the things that they're doing is really holding up their blessings. And so is there anything that you can say that can encourage some folks, Earl, that when you know they're at a place where I don't want to leave mama, I don't want to leave daddy, I got a little son or a daughter, and I don't want to do those things, but to help them to get to a place where they realize your blessing may be over there and you may be successful over there if you're just willing to take the risk, because you have to take risk in order to be successful.
I'm not sure what I can say, but I've come to a place, and I'm highly imperfect, but I believe you either live with faith or you live with fear. And if your imagination, if your dream, if your vision, if your you got that inkling that says, gosh, I'd love to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you choose, but it'd be so hard, or I don't have this background, or I don't have these resources, or this other person, or this. If you choose that, then you choose fear, and you sort of choose, not, and this is overly simplistic, but you choose to worship evil and negativity over God and good. And again, that's just my view, so it's not to judge anybody else. I'm not walking in anybody else's shoes, and I never have. But I say that when you stand at that corner, either you believe or you don't believe. And if something is put on your spirit that this is what I'm called to do, this is what would, oh my God. But you're like, oh, but I have to go, I have to choose this other path because of,
right.
And the reasons are really good. Like the reasons are really good. Like I didn't want to come to Indianapolis because the mother who raised me is now 92 years old.
Yes.
And I wanted to be able to go over there for breakfast, go over there for dinner. And I understand that in life, like what you have is love, and you have those who love you. And I just wanted to spend time, and I didn't want to be like some of my friends who were like, oh, I moved out to LA and I didn't get to spend time. And my dad just passed away. And literally one of my best friends, he's regretted it for now 40 years. No, that's exaggerated. 30 years.
Mm.
He's regretted that he went to LA. He then went to this place. He went to that place and didn't spend time because he knew at the end of it, oh, gosh, there's nothing more valuable on this earth than spending time with the people that you love and the people that you care about. And so it's not taken away from the reasons that somebody might say, I can't do it, but I still do believe if something's put on your heart, it's put on there for good intent and good reason, and I believe that's God speaking to me. I'll just say me. And then I choose,
right.
I'm going to follow the path and I don't see the path, or I'm not going to follow the path because it's much easier to do. I had no intentions of starting school. I was going to run great summer programs and great after-school programs for kids. And I got a pull to say, wow, wait a second, there's this thing in Indianapolis, and maybe there's a chance to grow the impact. And I'm so frustrated that these kids that have my scholars having these great summer experiences going back to these schools that are hellholes. I've got to do something more. And that's what brought me to Indianapolis. And again, I'm not judging anybody because I understand. And we've gone through financial challenges. We've gone through personnel challenges. We've gone through parents who were here to serve, turned against us and trying to sue us so that they can get a quick check. So, like, don't believe you me when I say there have been more than enough obstacles to rise up. But I still kind of come back to, well, what am I here to do? And then do I believe that even though I can't see the next step or the next opportunity, do I believe that good will conquer over evil? And I either believe that or I don't. And do I believe in the same that God will conquer over the devil? And I sort of walk that way in faith. I'm pleased to say more often than I walk in fear, I still walk in fear probably too much, or I might be even having greater contributions, but that's my own journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Earl. We truly appreciate you coming on with us, and we're going to transition to the next phase of our show. And if you are, if you're not too busy, if you can hang around and we can,
of course,
open up the phone lines. But I want to bring on in a few moments after I go to this song, I want to go and we're going to bring on Pastor Mike Couch of New Beginning Church of Philadelphia right after this. So we just ask you to stay with us. Go visit us on Facebook. In the meantime, we have somebody monitoring the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/PRF. If you're listening or watching us online, the telephone number to call in is area code 347-215-7934. So we'll be right back in a moment. God bless you. You're listening to the PRF Table.
Just stand on the road. Oh, 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 You just thank the
Once again, to those who are just joining us, this is the PRF Table. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we are so glad to have with us on this second segment of the show tonight, Pastor Mike Couch of the New Beginning Church of Philadelphia. And we are, let me just tell you, this brother, he has something serious. And if you were not on with us at the beginning of the show, we'll just tell you what we're talking about. We're talking about economic development and entrepreneurship. And this is part of our Black History Month series, how we honor Black History Month series by talking about Black Money Matters. And so with that, we welcome to the show Pastor Couch. Pastor Couch, good evening. How are you doing today, sir?
Man, good evening. Dr. Dunlap, it's truly a pleasure and honor to be on the call tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, listen, I know you were listening to the previous segment of the show. So I'll give you the same that I gave to Earl. We want to hear a little bit about you. I know a little bit about you, but we want some of the listeners to understand what is it that you do as a pastor from day to day as it relates to economic development and how you're in the community dealing with folks on a real basis.
Wow, man. I can start with our CDC. We have a CDC called Christian Credit Development. Through Christian Credit Development, we have several entities that we use as financial planning and credit repair and mortgages, and teaching families how to fix their credit, also helping their families get down payments to purchase homes. We have put over 700 families and homes in the last 10 years. And again, talking about economic development, out of Christian Credit Development, we also have an entrepreneur component that we teach brothers and sisters to get sure their business is right based on incorporation, tax ID numbers, bank accounts, and really help them to set up their business in a proper manner. A lot of people are in business, but when you really talk to them about their paperwork and stuff, it's not in order to have the wrong LLC or a wrong incorporation. Instead of in the great state of Pennsylvania, LLC works a lot better than a regular incorporation. And so just helping people get together, get their paperwork in order, and also to help them to launch, not just trying to use their personal credit, but how do we build business credit and start to use your business credit instead of your personal credit. And so that's some of the stuff we do, man. We also run a major food ministry. In the last 10 years, we fed over 50,000 people. We have a strong evangelism outreach in the community as well. We have did over 700,000 tracks in our particular community in the area called Frankfort section of the city of Philadelphia. And a major hub we used to go to every 3 days a week was an area called Bridge and Pratt. Bridge and Pratt is one of the major hubs. Over 50,000 people travel through that hub every day, every day.
Wow.
And so we had a great opportunity, man. Grew up in an entrepreneur family. My father had a business of construction. My mom was in real estate, and so was always just taught about entrepreneurship in the family, and that is nothing like having your own, but not just having your own, but help others get their own. And so I'm really big with that in our church, man, really promoting entrepreneurship. And even with churches today, they say, just leaving a church planning meeting not too long ago, and we were just talking about pastors going to have to go sooner or later bivocational because churches are not able to really sustain them because of the decline of churches. And so that's another, you know, another segment you might want to talk about. You know what I mean? But again, man, we are very, very excited with the work the Lord has laid on our heart to try to do, man, to empower our young people, empower our seniors, and also empower our constituents in our churches about entrepreneurship and starting businesses.
You mentioned that that you grew up in an entrepreneurial household. You know, that is something that was ingrained in you. You were able to see it. I know I'm speaking to you as one pastor, but you're also connected with other pastors. So since you're in this space, can you just put it out there? Because I put out a lot of things that you and Earl have said on this show, and everybody who knows me knows that I just say it like I have to say it. But how important is it for pastors to come together for the economic development of a community? And are there some struggles that you're dealing with or that you had to press through in order to do what you've been able to do through the help of the Lord?
The challenge that we are facing in the urban context of Black pastors, it's a major stumbling block, because a lot of the pastors are not thinking entrepreneur economic development. We talk about it, but when you start to look at their ministries, it's not reflecting that in the ministry. When you talk to pastors about financial planning and budgeting and teaching and everything, is not reflecting in their ministry. And so some of my guys I was talked to, I would say, man, if you just set up a little water ice stand at your church, showing some type of economic development will really help another young person or somebody in your church, because they need to see it. We have the church is the best business around, that you're able to run so many things through the church, can show entrepreneurship, but also empower the people around you. Back in the day, I never forget, at one of my home church, we cooked dinners, we sold dinners, and wound up opening up a restaurant that we was able to sell dinners through our church in a restaurant way. And so we had people come in, they would order their platters and stuff like that, sit down and eat. And that became a strong economic empowerment for the church, just off of the starting a restaurant. First, it started just selling dinners, just to be selling dinners to raise money. And then pastor went along and incorporated the restaurant. And then the restaurant went from there and got all the licenses and businesses that it needed. And it became a major economic development for the church, and allowed to hire people from the church, staff and stuff like that. And it became a great outlet. And so that's the challenge I'm really seeing today. A lot of churches sitting on an opportunity, but fail to maximize it. And the other part is even starting daycares. Some churches have started it, but don't want to press through the paperwork. I think we talked about it, you and I think yesterday, about so many of these churches in the city of Philadelphia are vacant Monday through Sunday. They may have a Bible study, but here it is. The most of the time, this church is closed. So 2 days is open, Sunday or Bible study night, and the rest of the time is thing going on. That's an opportunity to think about what type of business can go in there. What type of daycare can be set up, or a school can be set up, or anything to try to maximize the building. And we're not maximizing the building. You know, we just use it for worship. And I think God is going to hold us accountable, because we have not used the building like we're supposed to. We have not been good stewards of that building. And so it's a major piece. When I look at the church economic situation, three things come to mind when I look at the economic part. Is evangelism / discipleship, charity, and then also political action. The first part, the evangelism and discipleship, well, what did that got to do with economics? It has a lot to do with economics, because if we go out and evangelize and get a brand new person and we run them through our discipleship class, the discipleship class shouldn't just be all Bible. That's one part of
discipleship
class. The second part of that should be stewardship, budgeting, saving, economic development, teaching this person how to be whole, and talking about, look, what your finance look like. That should be all part of the new member's package of discipleship.
All right.
Let's pull your credit report. Let's see what's on your credit. Get your credit straight. We done walked you through the 66 books of the Bible. We done got that down packed. You know, we done talked about salvation. We took you to 70 essentials of discipleship. Now we're looking at the financial side of you. What do your credit looks like? Do you have a savings account? Do you know how to budget? What does a student loan debt looks like? How do we get some help with student loan debt? These are things that the church don't even have it set up. They have a new member class. It's a new members class. But it's not talking about the whole person. And so that's all part of the discipleship. We'll talk about the tithing, but the person can't tithe. It ain't got the money.
Then
we saying trust God. I'm saying, well, dude, I don't even take a salary from my church. You know, I don't want you to get cut off, Dr. Dunn. Something, you know what I mean? But I always tell it to my pastor friends, if you trust God too, won't you don't take no salary. Live off love. Live off love, trust the Lord. Because if you're telling the people to trust the Lord, won't you trust the Lord? I don't take a salary. And so, and my cousins, they're pastors. They don't take salaries. And so, again, man, we push it on the people, but we want a big salary. But we need to trust God as well. We need to trust God as well. And so the charity giving part, the church, again, need to utilize the building to help the constituents in the community and their people in the church. We utilize the building. It talks about giving back. You can give back with the church. Like I said earlier about some businesses being started, holding classes on resume writing and having businesses to come in to partner with you. Like I built a relationship with my Chamber of Commerce. And when I went to my first meeting at the Chamber of Commerce, when I told them I'm Pastor Mike, I'm just, you know, my church is wanting to be involved, they raised the question, why are you here? You're a church. I said, well, I'm here because I need jobs for my people.
There you go.
And so only I know if the Chamber of Commerce got people who own businesses, that means they have jobs. And by making that relationship, Dr. Dunbar, I was able to place several young men and women in jobs because I joined the Chamber of Commerce. And so that's a great piece that we don't look at, because the church got to really fill a void of helping families in their economics. And we don't talk about it. So.
This political piece. You mentioned that as I would say the third pillar. How active, you know, there's some people that would say, as a church, you know, religion and politics, and we shouldn't be talking about politics in the church. You know, you hear all those I would call them ignorant sayings sometimes, depending on who's saying them. But what's your involvement with the political arena? I mean, how do you make that work to help strengthen the economic base within not just your church but your community?
When you look at the political landscape, even right now as we're dealing with our new president, nobody don't like the new president, but the new president is a businessman. And when we look at America and government, is really ran as a business. And what I've learned over the years, my father was a community activist as well. And when I met my pastor was a major community activist in the city of Philadelphia. And watching and mimicking and being a part of these meetings and watching city council and state reps, a lot of these folks don't even have the education, let alone the experience over our communities. And so when it comes to the church, we know our communities. We've been in our communities. We know our people. We ought to, because the Bible says, you know, the shepherd should know the sheep. And
right.
So we ought to know what's going on in our church and in our community. We have a much better hold, goal savvy, than the ones that's in office, because our hand is on the pulse with the people. And so by me being involved with social justice and civic engagement, I have sat down with many of my legislators and talked about this minimum wage. And I wasn't even looking for a minimum wage. I wanted that wage that that the government gets, or a living wage instead of a regular
right.
wage. I'm talking about a living wage. So when inflation comes, the money automatically increases. And so when I sat down and explained to them that here it is, you guys are in office, and we have people in our community, our seniors, are looking at medicine or dog food.
Mm.
And they said, what do you mean? What do you mean, Pastor Mike? I said, because what happens, a lot of our seniors are on fixed income, and they hungry, but the medicine is so high. But they need their medicine to keep the blood pressure right, to keep the diabetes down. But they taking so much of their money to go towards medicine that they can't even buy great food to eat. And so the cheapest thing they can buy is some cat food or some dog food. And they like, oh, I don't believe that. I said, well, you haven't been in the neighborhood. You haven't talked to, you haven't
right.
watched some of the seniors. Because by me having a food ministry and a food pantry, I'm able to pick up and detect and have these conversations with seniors
right.
in our community who's saying, Pastor, you just don't
mm-hmm.
understand my money. And so that's why the church need to get involved with politics. It need to have a place at the table. The pastor, if not the pastor too busy, he ought to delegate the responsibility to a deacon, to a deaconess, or develop this ministry, social justice ministry, to be able to be at the table. And one of my sayings from my mentors, Dr. Tim McDonald out of Atlanta, Georgia, he said, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so a lot of our communities are on the menu. And what I mean about the menu, when you see gentrification, that means you're on the menu. You weren't even around. You weren't even there to put your 2 cents. That, dude, we need this to go on our community. Our seniors need some extra money, some extra help, some extra resources to survive. Here it is. They have a leak in their home. They can't even fix the leak. And if you can't fix the leak gets worse. Next you know, the roof
right.
caving in. And so I'm able to make these allegations to my legislators because I take the seniors to my state legislators and say, it's a problem we have. Here's some
okay.
of the resources. Here's some of the resources that are there for you to use. And we can all say and say, oh, no, they got plenty of resources. But if you're not in the circle, how you know about the resources? Seniors
right.
don't know about all the resources. They're not computer. Some of them are not computer savvy. Some don't have computers at all. And it's not like the old days, Dr. Dunlap, when we go knock on, check on our neighbor.
That's
you
right.
know what I mean? We go in and out our house, and we haven't seen Miss Ann. We haven't even checked to see how Miss Ann is doing because we're busy
mm-hmm.
with our own lives. And so the piece of saying, again, the church need to get involved with politics, to be at the table, to make the request known and say, listen, we need these things in our community. How can we partner with you? How can we get a rep here to come talk to my people at the church to let them know what type of resources are available for them that able to help our seniors, help our ones that's on disability, the ones that's dealing with all types of disabilities such as, asthma and autism and stuff like that. What type of resources that you have? Because you really work for us. When they take money from our state taxes, that goes to their salaries. So you work for us. city council the same way. When you take our city wage taxes, we pay your salary. So we ought to know what's going on. We need to hold the people accountable. And once we start, the church start to hold them accountable, we can also see some great results in our communities. And so it takes, the church really need to be involved. Pastor probably can't be involved all the time on everything, but the church need to set up some type of social justice ministry to be involved, to be able to make sure they're at the table and not on the menu.
Right. A couple of things that you said I thought was real interesting in. One was about pastors cannot do it all. And you know, Pastor Mike, about PRF and how we only go into churches through invitation only. We're not, I remember telling somebody on the team early last year sometime, that we don't go knocking on people's doors. We're not trying to bust down doors. We're only concerned with going through the doors that God has actually opened, because that way the environment has been set and laid for us. And so that's one of the ones that, as I'm taking notes about what you're saying, that's one of the ones I'm putting over there to the side under the challenge to pastors. A lot of the challenge with what you're talking about, what we do here at the PRF Institute, is if you don't invite anybody in, then you try to what normally happens is you're just dealing with stuff or not dealing with it by yourself. Because we can't do it by ourselves. Something I was saying in the lesson, we can't do it by ourselves. And if you go to Exodus 18, you know the story, Pastor, but it was clear. Jethro came to Moses, and he observed what Moses was going through. He observed how Moses was tired and beat down, trying to deal with all the people's problems. Yes, he was anointed. Yes, he was called. But your body can only go but so long. You can only do but so much. I don't care who you are. And so he gave him some advice, right? He said, set you some folks over thousands, hundreds, and 50s and 10s, set them over these smaller matters so that you can deal and let just deal with the bigger matters. And if that was the model of leadership right there, then we wouldn't have to talk about you need to set up a social action group. You need to set up a food pantry. And not only, it's not just about setting it up, right? Because every church is not designed to have everything. I think you'll attest to that. But if mm-hmm. we had relationship, if the relationships and the partnerships were there, again, we're talking about what? Economic development and entrepreneurship. So if the relationships were there, then even if I don't have a food pantry at my church, but I know some folks are hungry, then I'm sending them to you. Yeah, you may have to take a bus and a train to get there, but I'm still sending them to you. Here's the thing. Excuses don't work. They've been obsolete. So we can't use these excuses about things are too far. All this other stuff. I have two stories from this week that are PRF related. One person we sat down with had credit that wasn't so good, had some stuff on there. I don't know where this came from is what she said on this one. Or this other one, it may be mine, I'm not sure. I gave her two simple steps. The next day she called me, boom, God just walked her through that thing. And it's because she decided to put her faith into action. Faith without works is dead. Got another person. Husband passed away. Husband didn't leave any insurance. Don't know how they're going to pay the rent where they're staying, right?
Mm.
Okay, look, Miss Such and Such, here you go. Go down there and get you some emergency food stamps. Listen, Miss Such and Such, you need to get your money, get your information from the Social Security office so you know how much money you make, because nobody's going to reach you a place without knowing how much money you make. So we're dealing with folks that – and here's the thing. Both of these individuals are church folk. So, Pastor Mike, you don't have your pulse, your finger to the pulse, so you're not really dealing with the people on that level. You good with preaching. You good with teaching, doing your Bible studies. But those things are the things that people are going through that you have no idea that they're going through. But yet we do. And so there has to be this cry out, not just from the leadership. I get on us as the leaders. But there's also some responsibility that needs to be there doggone with the people. The people have a very big role in this piece of economic development and entrepreneurship. If you don't ask, if you don't open up your mouth, how do I know you're hungry?
That's right.
Okay, how do I know you're hungry when you're sitting there with a big old goose down on, right? Because it's like 20 degrees in Philly, right? You got a big old goose down on, so I can't see your ribs. But your face looks fine, but I can't see your ribs. So you got to be – this is my call to folks right now. You got to open up your mouth and say what's going on with what's going on in your life. Because if you don't, how can you expect God to work these things out? And these are not the things that you've been talking about, Pastor Mike, are not things that happen overnight. These are things that take continuing to go back to the city council, continue to go back to this politician, continue to go back out there to the streets, because you got people that come and go. Nobody stays in the same place forever. So I'm glad that you brought that out, and I hope one of the members on our team is going to post those three areas, because I think those three areas require a whole lot more discussion. But we can start somewhere. Every church can start somewhere. I want to just shift real quick, and what I want to do for probably the next maybe 15 minutes is to bring Earl back into the conversation, just in case there is a dialogue between the two of you, because the two of you have really dealt with this whole theme that we're talking about, which is the future. Even though y'all are in quote unquote different spaces, you know, he's in education, you're more in economic development, but at the end of the day, y'all are both working in the same space, trying to build a future for folks. And so, and I think one of the things that you said earlier or yesterday when we were talking was about developing a model for all boys Christian school. You mm-hmm. know, we have mm-hmm. Earl on the show, and this is just guy by God's design. We have him on the show who's built, you have a desire to build. These are the type of connections that must happen. Yes, if we don't come to the table, not just the PRF table, but if we don't come to the table where there's individuals that are willing to listen, are willing to give a helping hand. And Earl, one of the things that was so funny last year, somebody asked you a question, right? And with the question that they were asking, if you go back and listen to it, it was funny. They were really pretty much asking you to give them some help. And you were saying to them, okay, I need you to do something first, right? You show me that you want this, and then I'll help you. And so many folks can't get past that point because they want folks to just give it to them. And so while we have folks that are willing to come on a PRF table, while I'm connected to certain folks, if y'all don't – I'm talking to y'all who are listening. If y'all don't ask the questions, how can you expect anybody to give you the answers? We got a couple of minutes left. I just want to throw it back out there and see if, Earl, if you have any further comments, Pastor Mike, if you had anything else that you wanted to bring up in these last few minutes of our show tonight.
Well, if there are any callers, I'm wide open to listening to what they say, but it's been a blessing to listen to Pastor Mike as well in terms of the perspective that he's bringing about kind of self-determination and drive and ownership. That was my only observation.
Gotcha. Pastor Mike, what's next?
What's next at the new beginning? Man, I'm glad to have Brother Earl on the phone because I'm very interested in, again, like I mentioned earlier, I'm not about lip service. I'm really about putting my hand to the plow. And I want to set up my boy's school. And so when I heard you was going to be on the phone, Brother Earl, I was so elated because I really need to talk with you because I really want to set up my all-boys school and be able to put these principles in my young people. Like I have a major little football team, man, from 13 to 18. I pour diligently about finance, about resume writing, dress for success. I partner with several haberdashers that they do a thing called suit cleanouts. And they give me all their suits, and I get them tapered to my young men who don't have suits and be able to get them ready for, there's nothing wrong wearing a suit. You're going to have to wear a suit when certain interviews come up. You just don't want to go in any kind of way because, again, you being tagged. You being tagged. Lazy, shiftless, and can't be trusted. And so, and I'm like, Pastor Mike, are you serious? I said, yes, man. You might have white friends. You may have, you know, white teachers, but in the real world, they still want to judge you on your color.
Yes.
And not your character. Mm. And so, Brother Earl, I'm again, man, I was so hyped. And when I heard you, when what you have done over the years, I was like, I said, Dr. Dunlap, I want to get with that brother to hold my hand because, again, I want to set this school up because I think the only way we can change, we got to start with their young people. And these young people are hungry. They are hungry, man. We just don't – we keep downplaying them, but they are so hungry for the knowledge about change and that community and doing things and want to live right. I want to take care of my mom. I really want to buy her a house. I may not – I don't have the jump shot. I said, you don't need the jump shot. You got the mind. Mm-hmm. You got the mind and you got the determination, and that can change. And so small businesses, I talk to small businesses, entrepreneurship with them, and I think having our own schools will help. Will help because it gives them that identification of you are somebody, man. I got that blackness through my dad. I didn't get it from my school. We had Martin Luther King. We had Malcolm X. We had Rosa Parks. And that was the only stuff in my history book in class. And so all my black stuff I got from my parents, man. They took me to the museums, you know what I mean? They let me understand my history. They bought me books and everything like that. And I'm saying the only way we can let our brothers, our young brothers and sisters know who they are, that they are queens. They are kings. That the Atlantic Ocean was the Ethiopian Sea. They changed the name to Atlantic Ocean. And nobody will talk about that. They don't talk about that, you know. But if you don't know your history, you just think it's just Atlantic Ocean. Like, no, they changed the name. They changed the name. Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. He worked on the ship with the Moors. And he coming back and forth with the Moors, and all of a sudden he get his own crew. And then decided to launch out. And now he discovered America. But again, we don't know our history. We don't know our history. We get stuck and say, oh, Christopher Columbus. Dude, it was so embarrassing. And I know we got to go, Dr. Dunlap and Brother Earl.
Go ahead.
It was so embarrassing, man. I went to a Jamaica, right? I went to Jamaica. And you know they got there in Jamaica? Christopher Columbus discovered Jamaica. What? And so, again, these are the things that are out there, but always remember this. Whoever controls the pen controls the history.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Wow, that's good.
And so again, is this? That's why I was so happy, man. It's like, yo, I need to talk to Brother Earl to hold my hand because I don't know. I don't know it all, and I ain't got no problem saying it, but I need somebody who did it to say, look, walk me through the steps, man, that I can set this school up for my young brothers here in the city of Philadelphia, man, pour into them that we're going to make some new leaders. We're going to make some more Baracks, you know what I mean? Some ones that can run for president with confidence. Some can really make some change in our community. And so I thank you again for the opportunity, Brother Dr. Dunlap and Brother Earl. I really appreciate each and every one of the work that y'all are doing, and it's much needed. And may God continue to strengthen you guys' hand as you continue to build this wall.
Amen. And I'm going to add something to what you said, Pastor Mike. You mentioned about so we can have some Baracks. Sometimes we need to be able to have some Earl Greys.
That's right.
Sometimes we need to have I remember I grew up in West Oak Lane, and Representative Gray, which is another Gray I'm talking about.
Bill Gray.
I saw that office even when I was home a couple months ago. That office is still there on Ogun's Ave. I'm like, you know what? I never been in his office. Nobody ever took me into his office. Nobody ever said anything about this is somebody you need to meet. Nobody ever did any of that. So we have to
do that.
And if we this is the deal. You don't become a Barack. In most cases, we had to say that, especially with the tone of our political system right now. But you don't become a Barack without becoming something else first. And that something else first does not always mean – let me calm down. It doesn't always mean that it's going to be a politician. We see that. It may be somebody in the business world. It may be somebody like Earl that becomes the next Secretary of Education. You know, I could teach stuff like that. Somebody who knows a little bit about education, children. Somebody that went to a school. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Somebody that dealt with teachers.
Yes.
You know, I got to put you out there like that, Earl, right? You know, I'm putting it out there. You never know. Hey, it may not happen in this administration, but you never know because it's time to get kind of thin with the administration we got right now. You know, folks dropping off like flies. So. Hey, if it starts to happen, Earl, I'll delete this off the PRM table. I'll delete it. I know the CIA can get to it, NSA, but I'm going to delete it until they get to it. So I'm like, that wasn't what Earl said. That was what they said. So we have to, you know, I'm one of these guys that, and when it comes to ministry and how I'm trying to allow God to direct and lead me when it comes to PRF, I've been dealing with this notion of the low-hanging fruit. And the low-hanging fruit doesn't mean less than. It means the thing that you can grab a hold to that can give you a sense of accomplishment. And so if we start helping people, right, to look at, you know what, you can be the mayor of this particular city. Okay, well, you know what, how about you get on this committee? We got grown folk that can serve on committees. Committees in city government, because at the end of the day,
right.
It's not about
what one
person does that's sitting in the White House. What it is what those individuals at the lower levels are doing. I'm done with the political thing. I think I'm done tonight. listen, one of the things that, and I wanted to say this to you, Earl, and to you, Pastor Couch, is I wanted to have you two on, especially. I'm strategic with what I do. But I wanted to honor both of y'all, and I wanted to say this publicly on the show tonight. I want to honor y'all for being Black History. A lot of times when we deal with Black History Month, God, when we deal with Black History Month, it's so much about Martin Luther King. God bless him. I take nothing away from him. I take nothing away or speak no ill of Martin, of Malcolm, of Rosa Parks, or none of those. But Black History is being done every day, every single day. I say that because if we don't help instill into our young Black men and women, I'm going to say Black men, especially talking about the young Black men, if we don't instill it in them that you're Black History at an early age, then what's going to happen is you're going to have some other folks and some of our folks that is going to try to get them to be how they want them to be. And that's not what it should be like. One of the things, and Earl, if you can, tell us, your website, if you will. I don't want to get off the air without people having that piece, and we'll make sure somebody on the team gets to post that on our on our Facebook page, just like we've done with everybody else. If you can give them the websites or Facebook pages where they can reach out to you or see the things that y'all have been doing real quick while that's in my head.
Thank you. And phelanacademies.org. Phelan is P as in Paul, H-A-L-E-N as in Nancy, Academies, plural, so it's IES.org. So phelanacademies.org will lead you to us.
Okay, and what about Summer Advantages?
And so Summer Advantage is summeradvantage.org. Again, summeradvantage.org, and that will also take you right to us, and then you can access our Facebook, Twitter, and any other of our social media accounts.
Okay, and Pastor Mike, how can they reach you? I know New Beginning has a website as well.
Yes, NBCOP, N as in new, B as beginning, C as in church, O as in of, P as in Philadelphia, .org. So it's NBCOP.org. We can be reached there.
Gotcha. Well, I really just wanted to make sure that I honored both of you two as in Black History Month, as being Black History, because the amazing things that I've been able to see that you've been able to do with God's help has been tremendous. I appreciate the books. Last year, Earl, you remember, we dealt with the rise and fall of Black Wall Street.
That's right.
That was where we stayed for the whole month, talking about the Black banks that we had and the schools that we had and the businesses that we had until somebody decided to mess it up. And so my theme last year and my position is the same as it is this year. We have to put ourselves in a better position knowing what has happened in the past so we lessen the chances of the same thing repeating itself. We don't want to repeat certain things of history because we're ignorant to what history has already shown us. And so we have to see it, we have to understand it, and then we can move forward. So with that, I'm already getting text messages and talking about you, Earl, and Pastor Mike, about phenomenal and all these glowing comments about tonight's show. Thank you all so much for being on with us on the PRF table. It has been for what I will say is a phenomenal show, and we hope that everybody will join us next week, next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on the PRF table, where we will have two more guests. One is going to be out of Philadelphia as well, and the other one is going to be a vice president of an HBCU. So the first 2 weeks of this series have been focused around marriage and family, and the last 2 weeks of this month, this show and next week's show is focusing on education and economic development. So we're just excited to be able to continue to do this type of work. Please visit our website as well, PRF Ministry, MINISTRY.org, or visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/PRF. And we will see you next week, next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on the PRF table. Again, once again, God bless y'all on behalf of everybody here on the PRF table, myself, Dr. Dunlap, Mama, a.k.a. Marianne Williams, or vice versa, Adia Sanders, Brother Warren Feaster, and also Chitara Sherwood. We just say God bless you. We love you. Thank you so much, and have a great evening.
And the billows and the billows.